Okay, let's move then to item 1230.
30, replace code chapter 16.40 pertaining to private for hire transportation in the city of Portland.
Any comments or concerns before we vote?
There was a question about the wording of Commissioner Saltzman's amendment, which, as posted in today's second reading, is not the same as what Commissioner Saltzman moved and I seconded.
Can we get some help on that? What's the?
Well, there was also a discussion after the amendment was first offered, and we came up with an alternate version of it, which is reflected in what we have today. Commissioner Saltzman, is that correct?
Yeah, I think the version that appeared in the auditor's report is I'm comfortable with that version. I think that better reflects the discussion than maybe my ill-advised attempt to craft something on the fly. I think the amendment as published reflects my intent.
So you're satisfied with the language we have in front of us?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. All right. Other questions? Okay. Roll call, please.
Novick.
In this job, there are issues you deal with that you're excited to deal with because you ran on those issues. They're part of the reasons you're here. And there's issues you deal with because they came up on your watch and you have to deal with them. This, for me, falls squarely in the second category. Speaking purely for myself, I would be very happy if I'd never heard the words Uber or Lyft, because this is a no-win issue. If you don't let Uber operate here, then you're depriving Portlanders of a popular service used throughout the country and the world. If you let them operate here, you are murdering innocent traditional taxi cab drivers in their beds. This is a no-win issue. When the regulation of private for hire was transferred to PBOT, here's the situation we had. We had a set of regulations that are somewhat similar to taxi cab regulations in other cities, but regulations that are unlike any other kind of regulation that we have in the United States for any industry, as far as I can tell. There are some industries where governments have concluded there are sort of natural monopolies, natural geographic monopolies, like electric utilities or maybe garbage collection. I'm not aware of any other industry where any government says, we're going to allow competition, but we're going to limit the number of competitors and limit the amount of service each one of them can provide. It's as if we'd said that only three companies will be allowed to operate coffee shops in Portland, Starbucks, Stumptown, and Pete's, and Starbucks will be allowed to have 11 shops and Pete's 9 and Stumptown 7. We just don't do this in any other industry. We also had regulations that didn't work and or were inadequately enforced. We had the requirement that each taxi company have 20% of their fleet be wheelchair-accessible vehicles, a requirement which was, to say the least, not always kept, not always played out in practice, and which people in the disability community said did not result in good service for them. We also had regulations requiring citywide and 24/7 service for all the taxi cabs, which we didn't really enforce because we didn't monitor it. We didn't have staff to do spot checks to see if that was happening. We also had, when PBOT took over private for hire, Uber knocking on the door. And people might recall that Uber was very upset with Portland for not moving quickly to let them in. And at the time, Uber had no provision for any kind of insurance whatsoever in so-called period one, when the app is on, but the ride hasn't been accepted. And Uber had nowhere in the country, as far as I can tell, committed to providing wheelchair accessible service. What we have now before us is a set of regulations where we do allow for competition in this industry, where in terms of wheelchair accessible vehicles, instead of a fleet requirement that didn't work, we have a performance requirement that says you have to provide service, which we are going to enforce. We've been doing spot checks recently. We've determined that there are carriers that have not been providing consistent wheelchair accessible service, and we are going to impose some penalties. But we're not just doing sticks, we're also doing carrots. We are going to come up with a way to reimburse carriers for the actual cost of providing wave rides, which is more than the cost of a regular ride. We also have taken an action that I don't know if it's been taken anywhere else in the country, or if so, only a few, and I have to credit Commissioner Fish for this. When you looked at Uber's terms of service, it basically said, if you If it doesn't matter how negligent Uber is, no customer can go after them for anything. And Commissioner Fish looked at that and said, that's pretty outrageous. Now, I think, unfortunately, that similar disclaimers of legal liability are rampant throughout industry in America, but we regulate this particular service so we can do something about it. So we insisted that in Uber's disclaimer language, they from here on say, this is not valid in the state of Oregon, because actually there's a court decision that's saying that kind of disclaimer language in Oregon is not valid. So we insisted they put that in their language. Now, there's one issue that has been the subject of a lot of discussion where I think it's been pretty obvious that I've gone back and forth, which is the issue of insurance, and particularly the level of insurance in period one, which is when the app is on before Ride has been accepted. Now, the regulations before us require a higher level of insurance for the TNCs in period one than the state requires for non-commercial drivers. But I have to say that in my view, the level of insurance that we're requiring in period one in these regulations is not as high as it should be. I'd like to see it higher. But I'm not going to try to fix that today for three reasons. One, we've been told right now there is no insurance product in the market that provides for a higher level of insurance in period one. And we've been told by the insurance industry that they can't turn on a dime and create a new product. That takes time. A second reason is I'm still not quite sure what the appropriate level of insurance in period one is. What the taxi cabs say is that their experience is that they have more accidents before a ride has been accepted than after it's been accepted. What Uber, and they provide statistics on that. What Uber says is it's exactly the opposite. And it's possible that one or both of them are cooking the books. It's also possible they're both telling the truth. And there's a difference in the business model. Taxi cabs are allowed to take street hails, so if they don't have an active ride, they might drive around looking for another ride. The Ubers and Lyfts are not allowed to take street hails, so it might make sense to them to just sit in place and not drive anywhere if they don't have a ride accepted. So I am, for that reason, I'm not totally clear in my mind whether we should treat this period for insurance purposes exactly the way we treat it for all other purposes, I mean, have insurance in all other periods, or whether it should be somewhat less. A third reason why I'm not going to take action to fix what I acknowledge as a flaw today is this. Uber and Lyft have made it quite clear that if any jurisdiction departs from the, quote, national agreement on insurance, and let's make this clear, this is not only Portland where these insurance rules apply in period one. This is part of a, quote, national agreement that's been adopted in many places throughout the country. But Uber and Lyft have made it clear that if any jurisdiction tries to depart from this, quote, national agreement, they declare war. Now, I am not normally a guy who shies away from a fight. In fact, occasionally in the past couple of years, I've been told that I'm too eager to fight. But if you're going to have a fight with a $50 billion company, you're probably well advised to first look around for some reinforcements, for some allies. So I'm going to do that. Mr. Kafouri, you said last week that there's going to be legislation in this next legislature to require a higher level, a consistent statewide higher level of insurance in period one. With the caveat that, again, I'm still not quite sure what the level should be, I will support that concept, and I will come down to Salem to testify for it. Because I think the state of Oregon, which is seven times bigger than the city of Portland, has a better chance of winning a fight with Uber and Lyft than Portland alone. I'm also going to look around and see if there's other major cities in America that are in the same situation we are, where Uber and Lyft are operating under the, quote, national model, but a majority of the council would like to raise the insurance levels in period one, and see if we can take action collectively and together agree to jump off the cliff and take on this issue. Because there is strength in numbers, or as our labor friends say, there is power in a union. Speaking of unions, Seattle appears poised to do something on December 14th, which is fascinating, which I'm inclined to follow. As you know, I've been concerned about the fact that this industry as a whole, not just the TNCs, but the taxi companies, most drivers are classified as independent contractors, which means they don't have the kind of protections that employees normally have, like minimum wage and workers' comp, et cetera. Commissioner Avakian has said preliminarily that he thinks that Uber drivers, at least, are employees, and I think that's great. Now, I don't know, however, if that's going to hold up in court. or if he will follow through with his preliminary recommendation. Seattle is taking a somewhat different take on a portion of that issue. They appear poised to pass legislation saying that independent contractor drivers in the private for hire industry have a right to collective bargaining, which is not something I'd thought of before, because I think of collective bargaining as being governed by federal law. But I've been reading articles on it, and apparently the labor lawyers are going back and forth saying, well, maybe this would work and maybe it wouldn't. But I think it sounds like a hell of an idea. So I'll be looking to see what Seattle does on December 14th, and I'd be inclined to propose an ordinance that follows that. Having said all this, I can't tell you that I'm going to spend a bunch of time on either of these issues in the immediate future. My priority for the next several months has to be passing a local temporary gas tax to fix our streets and make them safer, which is a huge issue which the city hasn't dealt with in at least 28 years. So that has to be my priority. I'm going to have limited time for anything else. But I will say this to the taxi cab industry. If you can identify those allies in other cities, if you can identify two American cities with populations over 300,000 that are prepared to raise the insurance levels in period one if they have company, then I'd be prepared to move forward quite quickly with a proposal like that, hand in hand with those other cities. So with that extraordinary long preamble, I vote aye.
Fritz. Mine's even longer. I never thought that I would see the day that the Portland City Council would operate like the Republican-dominated Congress in Washington, D.C. Congress is known for allowing industry to write its own regulations rather than legislators acting on behalf of their constituents in the public interest. Sadly, that day has arrived here in Portland today, with these regulations being adopted on behalf of the transportation network companies, or TNCs, principally Uber and Lyft. I am greatly troubled by the fact that common sense regulations were not accepted by the council majority simply because Uber and Lyft wouldn't approve. This has been a long public process. It has not been a good public process. None of the workers most affected by this ordinance had a seat at the table at the community task force. TNC lobbyists had multiple private meetings with the primary council members supporting the ordinance. Taxi representatives did not. As a consequence of the process, the final ordinance does not represent a balanced approach. And as a result of that lack of balance, it does not act on behalf of the long-term public good of Portlanders. A December 8, 2014, a year ago almost, in the article in the Oregonian, reported Commissioner Novak stated, "If Uber thinks there should be no maximum price on what they charge Portlanders, they should make their case to the Portland City Council, because everyone agrees good regulations make for a safer community." Good regulations do make for a safer community, but this ordinance doesn't follow through on the laudable initial commitment to good regulations. As Commissioner Novak just publicly reiterated, his desire for both Uber drivers and taxi drivers to be treated as employees. It's not okay to say that we're going to punt on that and that if two cities join us, we'll go along. Two major cities have already said that insurance needs to be greater in the period one, and Uber and Lyft have decided not to operate there. In meetings inside City Hall, Commissioner Novak pledged to me that the new system would be as safe for an aging woman like me as the current taxi system. That is not the outcome with the policy before us. Background checks will no longer be overseen by trusted public servants working for the people of Portland inside city government. They will be contracted out to private third parties with only spot checks to confirm accountability. There is no requirement for drivers to take a defensive driving course, thus missing a huge opportunity to close the driver error gap as we implement Vision Zero. Taxi drivers are having to work longer hours to eke out a living. All of these factors make me less safe as a lifelong taxi cab user as a result of this ordinance. There are other factors in these rules dismantling the reliable, safe taxi service that Portlanders have depended on for decades. People choosing to use taxis will no longer be certain of the fare before we hail or book a cab. Customers will need to ask every driver in a taxi waiting zone for their fare in order to get the best price. New taxi companies will no longer be scrutinized by the grueling public vetting and approval by City Council in an open public hearing. I feel so sad for my friends in Union Cab, supported by the Communication Workers of America Local 7901. You worked so hard to win approval of your franchise. And now the majority of council is telling you you're an expendable casualty in the free market, the free market that is grinding the working class and middle class into the servants of the billionaire corporations. The majority of council is showing the same disregard for the values and services of RadioCab, predominantly owned and operated by veterans, the same for GreenCab and EcoCab. Which values and principles does this ordinance purport to serve? The almighty free market is a poor substitute for local businesses, local values, local loyalty. More problems with this ordinance. Only taxis will be required to use in-vehicle cameras. This puts both passengers and drivers at risk. This is another inequity created between taxis and TNCs. Why not require that TNCs have the cameras turned on during the ride in those wonderful smartphones? Answer is because Uber and Lyft say no. The city will lose revenue with the adoption of this ordinance. Many TNC drivers won't meet the threshold annual income level of $50,000 to be liable for our business income tax, and yet the rides they provide would otherwise have been taxable income for a full-time cab driver. Expanding the driver pool dilutes the tax base. The fees charged for TNC company permits are woefully inadequate to cover the cost of enforcement, meaning fees paid by taxi companies will disproportionately pay for transportation staff time attempting to hold TNCs accountable. This will mean fewer spot checks of taxis by the thinning of the soup. I don't understand why people driving for profit are somehow exempt from precautions on using cell phones while driving. Commissioner Saltzman has previously been so vigilant on distracted driving. Studies show that hands-free operation is just as distracting as handheld phone use. We heard testimony that the sound has to be kept on to alert the driver of a ride opportunity. Does that mean the sound is on for taking a phone call, too? Have three of you forgotten so fast the public service announcement we viewed from AT&T just a few months ago, urging us to put our cell phones in the glove compartment while driving? But with all these flaws, the ordinance is most egregious regarding the disparate requirements for insurance between taxis and TNCs. Taxis will continue to be required to carry $500,000 in liability insurance at all times. Uber and Lyft drivers will be covered by a paltry $50,000 when accidents happen, when drivers are waiting to pick up fares or are on their way home. And they'll get nothing if a crash occurs with a distracted driver tapping their phone to accept a ride, then crashing into a tree or another car. There is no required collision coverage in that scenario. Worst of all is the appalling disregard in this ordinance for pedestrians, cyclists, and other motorists injured by TNC drivers during period one, when the driver is cruising waiting for a ride or after a passenger has been dropped off. Mayor Hales asked for data on accident incidences. The data gathered laboriously by taxi companies proved that most crashes happen when drivers are waiting for rides or are on their way home after a fare. Yet no changes were made to the insurance coverage required to the required in this ordinance in response to that data. As you are all aware, my husband was killed in a car traffic crash last year. Through this excruciating life event, I learned a lot about insurance requirements in this state. The crash in which my husband was killed was probably initiated by the reckless driving of a commercial tanker truck as it was being driven home after dropping off its cargo. This ordinance sets the value of a person's life taken by a commercial driver returning from a paid fare at $50,000 maximum, less perhaps given the pitiful level of coverage the council is setting of $100,000 per incident. Four innocent people were harmed in the crash that killed my husband. Under this ordinance, another grieving spouse like me in a crash with four injuries would receive only $25,000 in compensation for a death caused by a TNC driver, even if the insurance company paid without the fees of 35% or more that are dedicated to the lawyer if the estate has to engage one to collect on damages. I am baffled as to why any of you would consider your own life or that of the person you love most in the entire world to max out at $50,000, less than one half of our 1 year of our salaries. I don't understand why you asked for the data on crash incidences before and after picking up a ride and then ignored it. The council is opening the city to liability in knowing of a problem and refusing to address it, the same way that ODOT failed to install median crash barriers until we passed the Fritz Fairchild Act. Whose names will be on the ordinance amending this code after somebody's family member is killed by a TNC driver in period one? Again, I quote Commissioner Novick early in the process. If Uber thinks taxis should not have to have proper insurance in the case of a crash, they should tell us why we should allow that. That has not happened. There is no public purpose in allowing TNCs to have inadequate insurance in the case of a crash. Mayor Hale said, our main concern is with public health and safety because the state invested in the cities the responsibility to do that. Beyond that, though, is the issue of fairness. Taxicab companies follow rules on health and safety. The rules adopted by the majority of council today do not follow the same rules for public health and safety for TNCs as for taxicab companies. There are multiple other problems with the done deal being adopted. Lack of protection for TNC drivers assaulted by passengers compared with taxis. Setting the insurance company rules to favor Uber's insurance, which is not admitted in the state of Oregon and will not provide protection if the James River Corporation fails, while making local taxi companies buy more expensive insurance from big national companies rather than reliable Oregon firms. Taxing all rides the same to pay for accessible rides without requiring TNCs to share the load of providing accessible vehicles, which places an unfair burden on taxi companies who recently invested in accessible vehicles to meet the city's fleet requirement. One-and-done driver safety checks rather than periodic retesting. I could go on and on. I'm beyond disappointed in these regulations, which ought to be so simple, fair, and safety-oriented. Aside from the here-and-now impacts on drivers, passengers and bystanders injured by TNC operations, I am very concerned about the negative climate impacts of putting thousands of TNC drivers on Portland streets. Before the pilot project, there were a mere 750 permits issued to taxis. Now we are told there are about 5,000 new commercial drivers on Portland streets, adding to congestion and making it easier for passengers to choose low-occupancy cars over transit. The mayor is heading to Paris to boast about Portland's commitment to reducing vehicle emissions and other critical mechanisms to combat climate disruption. How does this ordinance help in that regard? I am very grateful to the taxi drivers and other citizens who participated in this process, however flawed this process has been, as if their participation might make a difference. I was hopeful that my input might make a difference too. I see no evidence that it has been that's just true. I thank Director Leah Treat and the Portland Bureau of Transportation staff. I recognize that you have carried out the direction of your commissioner in charge and your mayor. I expect and receive the same from the Bureau directors assigned to my portfolio. Thank you to my colleague Nick Fish, who has stood side by side with me in trying to protect the interests of our constituents rather than ceding to the demands of two powerful out-of-state corporations. Like the many Portlanders who have provided support and encouragement to me over the past 62 weeks, Commissioner Fish, your efforts have been hugely appreciated, even though we can't change the outcome. Thank you to Claire Adamsick, Tim Crail, and Tom Brazeau on my staff, and Judith Mowry and Dancy James in the Office of Equity and Human Rights, who tried hard to get taxi drivers' voices heard. I recognize there are many Portlanders supplementing their income or driving for Uber and Lyft as their primary income. I appreciate their participation in the process, too. I worry about the TNC drivers putting their families at risk from driving without proper insurance, surveillance, or support from their TNC employer. When $50,000 insurance proves too little in period one, the injured party can and will sue you personally to recover damages. I believe we could have set up a system that safeguards both drivers and riders in the new paradigm, and those in the taxi industry continuing to provide service to women like me who do not feel safe getting into an unmarked car with no camera running. This ordinance does not do this. This ordinance denotes caving in to multinational corporations at the expense of Portland businesses and the safety of our community. There is limited public purpose in the regulations being adopted today. This ordinance represents capitulation to the lowest common denominator in the worst way. I am very disappointed that Portland isn't stepping up to set the national standard for a sharing economy with adequate safeguards for both workers and customers. This is one of the saddest votes I have cast in almost 7 years in office. Portlanders will lose their family wage jobs. Fare-paying passengers will not be as safe as when hiring rides in Portland, and victims will receive grossly inadequate compensation when tragedies occur as a result of this action. This ordinance does not act on behalf of the long-term public good of Portlanders. In casting my vote, I would like to add an emphatic swear word, but in the interests of decorum, I will simply vote in the name of all those traffic crash victims. No.
Fish?
I want to begin by acknowledging the countless hours put into this process by key stakeholders, including the taxi companies, drivers, TNCs, the private for hire task force, staff at PBOT, by Mayor Hales, Commissioner Novick, and their staff. I believe they worked in good faith to attempt to craft policies
that strive to balance fairness, safety, and jobs. I also appreciate the progress we've made on a lot of issues I care about, like requiring TNCs to tailor their terms of service to reflect Oregon law, improving service to disabled customers, and clarifying that TNC insurance is primary in all three periods. That said, I cannot support this proposal. As I have said before, I am not pro-taxi or anti-Uber. Rather, I have a healthy dose of skepticism to the claims made by a company with a well-established track record of running over its critics, its competitors, and its regulators. I have questioned whether the public interest is served by deregulating this industry, and I have expressed concern with the business practices of many of the key players in the so-called sharing economy who simply declare that the rules don't apply to them. Throughout this process, I have supported reasonable policies and regulations that reflect our values, not theirs. But I keep coming back to the same issues. Fairness, a level playing field, consumer protection and safety, and perhaps most important, trust. Time will tell if my concerns are justified. But today I cannot support this ordinance, and so I vote no.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Novick, Brian Hockaday, the Portland Bureau of Transportation, for really taking a thankless task and doing yeoman's work here. I think that there's been an effort to level the playing field as much as possible between TNCs and taxicabs, and I think that's the good direction to go in. And I know we like to talk about $50 billion corporations versus small taxicab companies, but I look at this as a new reality. I mean, this is a generational shift. People like me, who are over 60, are committed to taxicabs, and I will always use taxicabs. Take my daughter, who's 25 years old. She will use Uber and Lyft. She will not envision anything else. And I've been to many cities in the last year, Austin, San Francisco, New York, and all of those have the same issues going on here, and you know, particularly San Francisco. And I see a very healthy taxicab industry in San Francisco, despite the emergence of Uber, Lyft, and whoever else is a TNC. So I think we need to recognize that this is being sought by Portlanders. As I said, it's a kind of a generational thing. Anybody under 30, 35, they want this. And I've heard countless testimonials of young people who say they go to the bars now and they take an Uber or Lyft home. They don't drive. So I think there's a tremendous public safety benefit in that, and it's a reality. They're not, you know, cabs, for whatever reason, are just not as available when they're needed, when the bars are closing. And I think that's a tremendous public safety aspect of this that we tend to overlook, but it's a reality. I do think that enforcement is a key, and that's why I'm so happy that we're doing a 50-cent surcharge per ride to be dedicated to enforcing these new regulations. And I think that's been a key concern of the taxicab industry. I think you were heard, and we will have a robust enforcement program. I am convinced of that. And finally, I would just like to say that it's time. You know, we had a robust demonstration period. It's time to move out of our own phase one and get into our own phase two. As Commissioner Novick has alluded to, you know, phase two may be robust as well. But it's time to say we've had the trial period. It's shown that the pie of people using TNCs and taxis has increased dramatically. True, the taxi cab share of that pie has declined, but not as precipitously as feared. I believe there's people like me and Commissioner Fritz, others who are always going to use taxi cabs, and there's always going to be a place. But there is also a place for transportation network companies, and we need to accept that and get these rules in place and move on. Aye.
Well, I also want to thank Commissioner Novick and his staff, Brian Hockaday in particular, Jim Owens, who led the task force, facilitated the task force of citizens who helped us try to work our way through these issues. And I won't add a lot to the good comments that have already been made, but I want to add a little bit of context. Remember that how we came into this issue. These TNCs, as Commissioner Novick pointed out, were something new under the sun. They started operating in the rest of the Portland metropolitan area. And I want to reiterate this point. We are 600,000 people in a region of 200, $2.2 million. In the entirety of the rest of the metropolitan area, there are no regulations whatsoever with respect to transportation network companies. Not in Vancouver, not in Beaverton, not in Gresham, not in Lake Oswego, and so on. So there is an appropriate role for the state to play, and I hope they do. And I hope the discussion about insurance continues there, as well as the discussion about who is or is not an independent contractor. But what happened in the city of Portland was these transportation network companies began putting pressure on us to allow them to operate here. Then one of them began operating illegally. They were told to stop operating illegally so we could consider changing our regulations to incorporate them into the new reality that we're in, and we have done that. We haven't gone as far as some would like us to go in those regulations, but actually I think we've gone farther than almost any other city in the United States. That's a good start. These are regulations. We can change them, particularly after the state acts. But I think it's important to remember that context, that no one asked for this, least of all the transportation commissioner or his bureau. They have some other work to do, and I appreciate your priority very much, Commissioner Novick. But we have made a good effort at regulating a new thing, but we've got to remember that there are others who also have to play a role here. The state labor commissioner, the state legislature have a role to play in trying to figure out how this is going to work going forward, and the city of Portland will continue to be involved in that work. So I appreciate the good effort that's been made. It's a good start. We have not achieved perfect equity between the traditional taxi cab companies and transportation network companies. I understand that. That wasn't really possible for a city to do. But I hope that as this goes forward, this city will continue to be an innovative, effective regulator in a context of a brand new global industry that showed up uninvited on our doorstep. Aye. Thank you.